Hello everyone. Thank you very much for coming to the Kikugon party. I hope you've been enjoying the drink and the food. We've invited Mark Ashton to come and speak. He's a pastor of a local church and he's going to speak on the Christian faith for those who are curious about it. So without further ado, I'll hand over to him. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. One of the things I guess that most irritates people about Christians is their confidence. How can they be so sure about something that for most of the world is a pretty big puzzle? And overconfidence is always it's always irritating in life. There's a story of an air vice marshal at the end of the last war in England, who went down to inspect some new seaplanes that the Air Force had taken charge of. And he asked, as a vice marshal, if he could be taken up for a flight in one of them. And he duly went for this little joyride around Southampton. Then he said to the pilot, "Can I take control?" And the pilot said, "Well, of course, Air Vice Marshal, of course you can, sir." So he started to fly the little plane around, and then it was time to come down. He lined it up to land it back at the airfield, and the pilot did not like to correct an air marshal, and he waited to the very last moment before shrieking in his ear, "Sir, this is a seaplane. You can't land it on a runway." Whereupon, Lister banked the little plane round, landed it nicely on Southampton water. Taxied to a stop before he said anything, and then he turned to the airman beside him and he said with withering sarcasm, "Airman, did you really think that an air marshal does not know the difference between a seaplane and a conventional aircraft?" And with that, he opened the cockpit door and stepped straight into the water. We love that sort of story, don't we? And I think there are many who feel Christians are exercising that sort of confidence. They're confident about something that actually is arrogance. And there's one little book in the Old Testament called the Book of Ecclesiastes, which, strangely enough, is very much in that mode. It just takes to pieces all the confidences that you and I can build up in this world. It looks at all the things that human beings give their lives to. It might be the pursuit of pleasure. It might be the pursuit of learning. Might be the pursuit of relationships. It might be the pursuit of achievement. And it takes those things to pieces, bit by bit. It's great rallying cry is meaninglessness, meaninglessness. All is meaninglessness. On the older translations, vanity. All is vanity. It has some helpful things to say, perhaps, about study. "For in much wisdom is much vexation. And he who increases knowledge increases sorrow." Some of you may be thinking of going on to do a PhD. Well, it has another nice little word at the very end of the book, actually, on the same thing. It says this, just as the book ends. It says, "Of making many books there is no end, and much study is a weariness of the flesh." So it's an extraordinary disillusioned voice for the Bible to be speaking with. And it sets up before us a critique of what we human beings try and build our life around. I became a Christian during my time at college, and I became a Christian partly because I was disillusioned with the alternatives, and I had looked hard at them. I looked hard at the sort of humanist existentialism that was around. We're talking a long time ago, I'm afraid, the 1960s. I'd read the whole of the Quran before I ever read the Bible. I'd worshipped in a mosque before I became a Christian. And I sometimes wish that non-Christians would look at the alternatives with as much critical alertness as they look at Christianity. I don't think it does Christianity any harm at all for you to be critical of it, for you to try and take it to pieces. But if you have come this afternoon in that move, which you may well have done, thinking, "Well, I'll come along and see what's going to be said, but I'm not going to get rid of my critical faculties. I'm not going to just go along with these overconfident Christians who think they know things and can be certain about things that you cannot be certain about." If you have come in that sort of way, I hope that you are as critical of the other things that you might, the other beliefs that you might be holding on to. Again, I'm sorry, this is from a long, long time ago, but a guy I used to know a bit called Steve Turner wrote a sort of, I don't think he called it a poem, I think he would have called it a poem, which he called Creed. And it went like this, you may have come across it. I believe in Marx, Freud, and Darwin, all spelt as one word. I believe everything is okay as long as you don't hurt anyone, to the best of your definition of hurt, and to the best of your knowledge. I believe in sex before, during, and after marriage. I believe in the therapy of sin. I believe that adultery is fun. I believe that sodom is okay. I believe that taboos are taboo. I believe that everything's getting better despite evidence to the contrary. The evidence must be investigated. You can prove anything with evidence. I believe there's something in horoscopes, UFOs, and bent spoons. Jesus was a good man, just like Buddha, Muhammad, and myself. He was a good moral teacher, although I think his good morals were bad. I believe that all religions are basically the same, at least the one that I read was. They all believe in love and goodness. They only differ on matters of creation, sin, heaven, hell, God, and salvation. I believe that after death comes the nothing. Because when you ask the dead what happens, they say nothing. If death is not the end, if the dead have lied, then it's compulsory heaven for all, except perhaps Hitler, Stalin, and Genghis Khan. I believe in total disarmament. I believe there are direct links between warfare and bloodshed. I believe that man is essentially good. It's only his behavior that lets him down. This is the fault of society. Society is the fault of conditions. Conditions are the fault of society. I believe that each man must find the truth that is right for him. Reality will adapt accordingly. The universe will readjust. History will alter. I believe that there is no absolute truth, except the truth that there is no absolute truth. I believe in the rejection of creeds and the flowering of individual thought. I believe in the death of sacred cows. I believe in the freedom of thought. Well, I'm not sure it's poetry, but it is quite a helpful perspective, because most of us, I suspect, find we are adopting quite a number of those beliefs, if you can call them that, that Steve Turner is ridiculing in that poem. And I would want to encourage anyone here who is still seeking to make their minds up about the Christian faith to look as critically as you can at the alternatives and to answer the questions that, or to try to answer the questions that we all want to ask, but that we all want to shelve because of how difficult they are. We want to put them back in the pending tray all the time. Questions like, how do I explain the world in which we are, the world which we live? Perhaps that's too big an issue. How do I explain good and evil? Maybe that's a bit closer to hand. How do I explain my own personality, my own encounter with good and evil? And I would be surprised if you can find a consistent and satisfactory answer to those questions that excludes God. But the trouble with God, and I mean this is where the book of Ecclesiastes gets us actually, is that if he exists at all, he is pretty, well, he is by definition unknowable. Because what has been made, what has been created, can't of itself understand what has made it. So it's no surprise if you find, as I found, for the first 20 years of my life, God was unknowable. I thought he probably existed, I have to say, because I could not make sense of the world otherwise. But he certainly was not known to me. And it was talking with Christians that encouraged me to look at the way he might have tried to make himself known, the way he might have tried to make himself real in his world if he was there, which is the claim Christians make for Jesus Christ, the man who appeared on earth about 1,000 years after the person who wrote the book of Ecclesiastes, but who would have taken that book much further, because he said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. And in Jesus, we are given an opportunity to encounter the Creator God, who is, I would want to suggest, by far the best, in fact, the only satisfactory explanation, not just for the world, but for your life, your experience, and my experience of life. And you and I are not offered some difficult intellectual proposition. Life is not like taking finals. Maybe some here have just recently sat the most important exam of your life. And I think there are people who feel, well, if there's a God at all, he has set me an exam in good behavior and right thinking, and somehow I must try and pass his questions. But actually, God is not like that at all. You could never pass that exam. I could never pass it. Because a God who's made this universe must be outside and beyond and unknowable to the people within it. What God has actually done is he's come down in the person of Jesus and taps each of us on the shoulder. It's as though you're sitting there in that exam. Maybe you can remember it from the last few days, even desperate to pass, bent over your desk, perspiring, thinking my whole future depends, whether it's a medic or whatever it is, and getting these questions right and getting there. And then the invigilator maybe does that irritating thing that invigilators do sometimes. My last experience of exams was, I must say, as invigilating them rather than actually sitting them. And I have to say, it is a lot more fun to be an invigilator, I can assure you. I loved that walking up and down, but particularly the pupils you didn't particularly like, just stopping behind them to distract them in the middle of their exam. So that's got nothing to do with the illustration. Imagine in that situation, you're bent over the exam that matters more than anything else, GCSE, needlework, or whatever it is. You've got to get it. Your whole future depends on it. The invigilator comes and stands behind you and taps you on the shoulder and says, you don't need to take this exam. You say, but I do. It's the most important thing I've ever done. My whole future is going to depend on getting through it in these next 45 minutes. And he says, no. He says, I've got your name written down here. You've already passed. You've got to start first, actually. You can get up now. You can walk out of the exam hall. It's all over. It's all done with. He said, no. And he says, yes. Look, there is your name. It's done. And that is what Jesus does for you and me. He comes to us. He taps us on the shoulder. And he says, look, God already loves you and wants a relationship with you. He doesn't show us our names written on a list. He actually just shows us his hands, where he took the penalty, where they put nails through and they nailed him to the cross, where he took the penalty for our sins. And he says, look, you can get up, you can walk out now of the exam hall of life because you've passed. God loves you. And I want to encourage you more than anything else to look closely at Jesus. Don't ponder the imponderable questions. Not yet. I'm not saying you should shelve them forever. But Christianity doesn't ask you to solve metaphysical conundrums. It asks you what you will make of Jesus Christ. And Jesus is available to everyone. You don't have to be clever to know about Jesus. You don't even have to know very much about the Christian faith, certainly in most parts of the world today, to know about Jesus. All you have to do is to look at him and to make your own mind up about him. Nobody can make it up for you. Your mum and your dad can't. Your Christian friends at college can't. You alone. And that's the one question you'll be asked at the end of everything. When you and I die, there will be only one thing that matters, what we made of Jesus Christ during this life. And that's all I can share with you this afternoon. It's all I'm going to share with you this afternoon. Thank you for being as attentive as you have been. It's not easy on a nice warm afternoon with a million other things going on. But thank you for listening. And I want to offer you, if you would like to go any further with this, I've got a couple of different booklets, actually. I've got two little booklets, which I would be very happy to give anybody who wanted to just go a little further with these things. I don't think one can reasonably expect something as important as this, a decision to be taken just like that. I think you need to sit and to think and to read through privately and quietly oneself. And actually, that's exactly what I did with this particular booklet. Somebody gave it to me, and over 2 weeks, not this actual one, but this book in a very much earlier edition, which I got very cross with it. I remember crumpling it up and throwing it on the ground as I thought through Jesus Christ and thought through whether it was possible I could know God through him. And eventually, I myself made that discovery. Oh, God reached out and touched me through Jesus all those years ago. And if you wanted to pick up one of those, there are probably others, there are probably some on the over on the table there. But thank you for listening this afternoon, and thank you for being here. And I'm going to be around, and I'm sure there are many other Christians around in the gathering who would very happily talk further with you if you wanted to.